DW.
They have been accused of violating Myanmar's Official Secrets Act. The prosecution has said that they allegedly obtained confidential documents related to the military operation in Rakhine. From the side of the reporters, you know, what the reporters have told their families is that what actually happened was that they met two policemen for dinner on December the 12th. And, you know, these were the two policemen. They haven't met them before. And these two policemen unsolicited, you know, they gave them basically those, yeah, some sort of documents and told them to look at them at home. So our reporters never really had a chance to even open them and look at them. And like I said, they didn't ask them for those documents. And then the moment they left the restaurant where the dinner was taking place, they got arrested by a fairly large group of plainclothes policemen.
Have you been able to talk to them while they're in prison? How are they coping?
I myself have not been able to talk to them in prison. We have not been allowed to visit them. So the only time when we have access to them is during the court hearings, and that there are brief moments when we can sort of, you know, just grab them and, you know, just kind of like hold their hands or kind of pat them on the shoulder and tell them we're with them. But it doesn't really count for like a normal conversation. The families have been able to meet them regularly in jail, and our lawyers also have had access to the reporters, so we can sort of to a degree communicate through them. Obviously, this is an ordeal for everybody involved. Obviously, the reporters who are in jail, in Myanmar's infamous insane prison, where a lot of the political prisoners from the now ruling National League for Democracy, led by Aung San Suu Kyi, used to be incarcerated. But I think, you know, they're trying to stay mentally and physically strong. They're trying, I suppose, also not to worry us. So they're coming out with thumbs up and always kind of trying to show that they haven't been broken and they are staying strong. But obviously, it's an incredible tragedy and incredibly difficult, tough time for their families. Joso has a very young daughter who comes to every hearing, and every time when he leaves, she bursts out in tears and she misses her father. Obviously, they have wives, they have families, they have parents, and they're all, you know, still very much deeply affected by what's happening.
Do you know anything about the conditions in prison?
They haven't reported any sort of like physical torture or, I don't know, beatings or anything like that. So, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, these are still very difficult conditions, and these are not sort of prisons that meet any sort of international standards. And I think actually prison reform is one of the things that hasn't really kind of progressed since the NLD government has been elected. But, you know, they're trying their best to cope with this. And, you know, let's not forget that they're facing 14 years in jail.
Let's look at the role of Aung San Suu Kyi in this. So she, as opposition leader, she was very outspoken against journalists being imprisoned, and well, she was a freedom fighter herself. But many say that the hope of, well, greater freedom, greater press freedom has not been fulfilled under her leadership. And one indication might be that they haven't done away with this Official Secrets Act that can be used against journalists and to, well, muzzle freedom of speech. And the question is, why has Aung San Suu Kyi not pushed for more reforms, for more, well, freedom of press, really?
Right. So it's not only the Official Secrets Act that in the recent sort of months has been used to, used in cases involving journalists. There's also been Unlawful Association Act, which is a pretty serious offense. And there's also a much broader and more commonly used telecommunications law, which is also very broadly worded. And so there are a lot of different laws that have been used in this regard. But it's difficult for me to sort of speak for the administration as to why these laws are still present. And, you know, I think the story that Wallon and Joso produced highlights the vital importance of free press and free speech in a country that's going through a very turbulent and difficult period. I think the story that they produced on on the massacre in Ndin, just shows that this sort of impartial, unbiased, independent reporting is really what both the Myanmar but also the international public needs to find out what actually happened in Rakhine.
With these kind of arrests and detentions, the government is creating a chilling atmosphere for local journalists and also for international reporters. There was this case of AP correspondent Esther Tusan, who left the country late last year after she received threats and men were following her to her home. Where is the country headed, both in terms of media freedom and freedom in general?
That's a very difficult question, but, you know, it's undeniable that, you know, the journalists in Myanmar, both local and international, do feel that space has shrunk quite considerably. And it is difficult to continue doing like really high quality reporting. But I think, I'll just say again that the story that Wallon and Choso produced is a great testament to the fact that this kind of reporting is needed. And then, Reuters continues to report on Myanmar, and, you know, we're very interested in how Myanmar government deals with the, you know, now where there is a problem of, you know, the question of repatriation of the Rohingya refugees. There is obviously a question of, you know, what happens next in northern Rakhine. And there are obviously many other issues, including the economy, politics, more broadly, the peace process in Myanmar. I mean, it's a fascinating, great country that's going through a huge transformation. So there are plenty of great stories to be written here. And, we hope to achieve that in the months and years ahead.
DW